Welcome back to CFAX Sunday Morning Public Affairs on CFAX 1070, Victoria's News Authority. Broadcasting from British Columbia's capital city. We're joined in the studio now by Lisa Helps, Victoria City Councillor, community activist. Lisa, welcome to the show.
Good morning. Thank you.
And we still have on the line, hopefully, Dr. Jane Rezai. Jane, are you still there?
I am still here.
So, Jane, say hello to Lisa. Lisa, say hello to Jane.
Hi, Lisa.
Good morning, Jane.
Okay.
Feels like an old Walton show, isn't it?
Exactly.
What's going on here, Bob?
Good night, John boy. I wish I could say that to you. Anyways, Jane, thank you for staying on there.
Mm-hmm.
There were some things we were going through here that I wanted to get to. You know, we've dealt with, you know, the myth that people think eating properly means you don't get to enjoy your food.
Mm-hmm.
We've gone through the notion that, you know, in this new society or the way demographically we're organized, that we're just too busy to do this. Let's get to the issue of expense. I mean, there are a lot of people who think it's, too expensive because, you know, they go into the grocery store, they go in the outside aisles and they go to produce and they see the regular produce sitting there and then they see the organic produce sitting beside it and it's a little more expensive. Is that really the issue? I mean, to what degree is there an expense issue here?
There is an expense issue, but there's also a perceived expense issue. So yep. It really depends on your income level. There are some families at such a low income that it really is expensive to eat whole food. No matter how simple and easy you make it. So that's unfortunate, and that's a whole issue of accessibility and food security and some other things. That's probably another whole discussion.
Mm-hmm.
But generally, you know, the most expensive foods that we eat are protein foods, and we eat far too much protein in our society as it is. And I think that if people were to veer a little bit away from a high protein diet, high fat and high protein diet, and were a little bit heavier on the vegetarian side of things with some animal protein thrown in, they would find their expenses were cut significantly by how much they spend on food. I think also when we purchase mostly packaged foods, that we're going to find that we're spending more money, especially when we look at the newer, supposedly healthier packaged foods, especially the organic stuff and gluten-free products and things like that. That's where money is going up and up and up. What I tell people is organic is great. I'm a huge believer in organic. Organic is really just the way we used to grow food 50 years ago. There's nothing really...
So it was normal.
It wasn't even called organic.
It wasn't called organic.
It was just food.
It was just how we grew food.
Yeah.
But now to be certified as a certified organic producer of any kind of food, it's a very expensive process. And so the food as a result becomes very expensive. And what I try to tell people is first and foremost, see if you can buy local foods. If there's, you know, for produce especially, buy local, because a lot of small local farms, and I'm here on Pender Island now where there's quite a bit of this happening, a lot of the small local farms are doing their very best to keep things organic anyway. They're just not necessarily going through the certifying process, and so they can't get the label stamped on their foods, but they're still healthy and much cheaper than purchasing organic carrots from California, for instance.
Yeah, I think, Jane, going back to a point you made earlier, I'm really curious. I hadn't ever thought about it that way in terms of if we eat less protein, mm-hmm. i.e. if we buy less, for example, steak and chicken and more, chickpeas and mm-hmm. kale and carrots, mm-hmm. which are, there's actually a cost reduction, a savings. And I wonder if any studies have been done in this regard, or if this is, because this is the first I've heard of it and I'm kind of immersed in the food world. But that's a really interesting expense shift, mm-hmm. and which accompanies a shift in diet and a shift in way of thinking.
Yeah, I'm not aware of any specific studies around the cost aspect of it, but it has been fairly spoken of over many, many decades that protein and high-fat foods are our most expensive foods to produce and therefore to purchase.
Right, and so then we can shift the discussion away from, hey, those organic carrots are really expensive, but mm-hmm. compare it against a steak or a chicken, or obviously we still need protein, but it really, that this kind of information that you're introducing producing really shifts the conversation.
Exactly. And you know, what's interesting recently, I don't know if you're aware of the Blue Zone studies that they did a few years ago. There's a collection of studies around the world at looking at healthy societies on all levels, healthy, you know, social health and mental health and everything else. And one of the things that they looked at was diet. And interestingly, in the healthiest communities around the world, none of these, none of their diets were completely vegetarian, but according to the researchers, animal protein was added into their diets as a garnish. In her words, is that the bulk of the diet, probably 85% of their diets were vegetarian, and maybe 10 to 15% were animal proteins and fats. And so not only just a cost shift, we have evidence now that indicates that the more vegetarian we are without necessarily being completely vegetarian, because that's not everybody's choice, we have the best health outcomes. And that's not reducing it down to how much vitamin A or how much vitamin D or any of those things. It's more a bigger picture of the picture of our diet.
Jane, and to your point, Lisa, I did a study. Study of one.
Great. And, let's hear your anecdotes.
And, how did that study work out, John? Please share it with us.
Meat and cheese are more expensive. And okay.
Maybe you should repeat that just so that, that people get that.
But you know that for someone like me who's not immersed in food, yeah. And, well, as opposed to eating it, and not immersed in how this all works. You know, just to say that is a paradigm shift, because you're just naturally down those certain aisles and you put them in your cart and away you go, and you go, man, eating healthier costs a lot more money.
Yeah.
Until you go, well, that's interesting. Why don't I just eat less protein?
And I think particularly, I mean, going to a point that Jane made earlier, which I think is really important, I can walk down the aisle and buy organic carrots, no problem. But I think for people who are at a lower economic bracket, that's the real big concern for me to make, and going to issues of food security and food sovereignty that Jane mentioned earlier, that's the issue that I think we as a society need to really turn our minds to, because it's fine to buy organic if you can, but if we can get local and or organic foods into the hands and mouths of kids and families who need them the most without having a radical subsidized food system, I think that's where we need to pay attention.
One other thing, last thing I'd like to move on to with you, Jane, is and you and I have had some discussions about this before. The thing that strikes me about all of this is the ignorance we have towards food. I mean, I remember you saying something to me once, you know, we'd never put anything other than gas in our cars.
Right.
Why do we not think before we put our fuel into us? And I go back and I think of, you know, when I grew up, you know, mother was a homemaker, and I don't think I ate store-bought food store-bought bread, I should say, until I was 17. She made bread. But I can remember when processed food started to appear, this was considered to be cool.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, oh, we're going to get some tang because that's what the astronauts drink, you know? But it was. I mean, that was the way it was.
Finally, you're getting back to my conspiracy theories from earlier.
There you go. Yes, it came from space, John. But I mean, you know,
I'm on Car Talk right now. Awesome.
You know, and then there's the fact that, you know, I mean, it just seems that, you know, the other thing, too, is that, you know, we're the only mammals that have meals. You know, everyone else grazes. You don't see a lot of obese animals in the wild.
Well, yeah, and the 3-meal-a-day thing came about as we restructured our workforce many decades ago, a couple hundred years ago, probably.
With the rise of industrial capitalism.
Yeah, and you know,
factories.
I find when I get people switching back to small little bits of food throughout the day, sort of pecking and grazing, they generally do better.
Mm-hmm.
We're really not physiologically designed to sit down and eat 2 or 3 big meals a day. So that is interesting that that shift. I mean, there's so many layers to how we eat. So why are we disconnected? Your original question, Bob. Why are we so disconnected from food? And why are we also ignorant of food? I don't think that actually I don't really think that we are. I think that part of the problem is that we're bombarded with so much food information now. It's astonishing how much food has become a focus, and which is good in a lot of ways. I'm thankful for that. I think it's great. We need to put attention into food because of those bigger picture issues that we were talking about. But because we're bombarded so much with the minutia of food, people are losing the sense of their own common sense. They're losing what I think intuitively people actually do know how to eat food. They just start listening to the experts, the so-called experts, and they stop listening to their own intelligence about eating properly. And honestly, I do think that people probably do have a better sense of what's what to eat. The problem is time and income, as we mentioned, but also cultural perspectives of eating healthy food. We all know there's stereotypes for people who eat brown rice and veggies, or, you know, make their own hummus or whatever. We have cultural stereotypes about people who do that, whether we call them hippies or they're uptight or
city councilors. That's pretty much.
That's pretty thank much God how she I said
eat.
It.
and so that plays a pretty big role in the way that food that people eat. And then the other piece of the puzzle I find as a practitioner in healthcare is the level of stress that people have these days, the kind of stress that we wouldn't have seen before for all kinds of newer reasons. Mm-hmm. And people are under a great deal of stress, and we eat differently when we're stressed. There's a whole brain chemistry thing that goes on that drives us to eat certain kinds of foods. When we are chronically in this sort of low-grade fight-or-flight state, which I find that a lot of people are in on a regular basis, as opposed to in times past when we were in crisis and those hormones would start to appear. Now we have this happening every day in most people's lives, and that changes what our food choices are without us being conscious of that as being the driving force. So that plays a role too.
Jane, I thank you for your time this morning. You've been very generous staying with us over the news.
Well, thank you for having me on. I'm sorry to ramble on so much, but thank you for giving me the opportunity to speak.
You have an excellent day.
You as well. Bye, John.
See you, Jane. Take care.
You too. Bye-bye.
The designers at Lux Home Interiors know that the inspiration for your style can be found anywhere. A trip to the beach, a piece of colorful art, or even a simple swatch of fabric. Whatever the source for your inspiration, your style is a reflection of your personality, and Lux has the interiors to match. Whether it's a single piece or an entire room, they'll work with you to bring your style to life. Visit the showroom at the corner of Douglas and Hillside or online at luxvictoria.com. Lux Home Interiors. Your style, your way.
Hi, it's Wendy from All Victoria Vacuums. Have you ever bought an appliance only to get it home and spend the next 3 hours putting it together? At All Victoria Vacuums, we take your vacuum out of the box, assemble it for you, and even offer to help you to your car. We carry the best brands like Dyson, Sebo, and Ricard. Does your vacuum need a fix? Our repair estimates are always free and our technicians rock. All Victoria Vacuums, the little guys on the corner of Hillside and Cedar Hill for 34 years.
Metrolexus Toyota's factory-authorized clear-out is on now. The 2013s are arriving daily, and we need to make room. Savings up to $10,000 on select 2012 models. That's right, $10,000. So hurry in for best selection while they last. Or choose 0% financing up to 72 months. Metrolexus Toyota, voted year after year the best place to buy a new car in Victoria.
Who can ask for anything more? Metrolexus Toyota.
Douglas, across from Mayfair.
Time is not on our side. Act now with your future in mind. Financial market volatility is fact, and those facts are worrisome. Put your financial needs in the hands of successful and proven wealth management advisors. Todd Vaughn and Alan Bevan, through TD Waterhouse Private Investment Advice and the TD Bank Group, bring you the kind of guidance and strength you need in today's market. Call them today at 250-953-6015 and stop worrying.
TD Waterhouse Private Investment Advice is a division of TD Waterhouse Canada Inc., member Canadian Investor Protection Fund.
After servicing cars on Vancouver Island for over 38 years, Midas fixes everything. When your check engine light is on, when your brakes squeal, when your tires need balancing, when it's time for an oil change, take it to Midas. Right now, get everything checked and an oil change for just $49.99 with the Midas Get Ready for Summer Maintenance Special.
Midas, the personal attention of a neighborhood garage with the protection and guarantees of a national chain. Trust the Midas touch.
Victoria's first choice for information, news, weather, traffic. If it's happening, it's here. Victoria's News Authority, CFAX 1070.
Welcome back to CFAX Sunday Morning Public Affairs on CFAX 1070, Victoria's News Authority, broadcasting from British Columbia's capital city. We're joined in the studio, as we were last segment. Staying with us is Lisa Helps, Victoria City Councillor. Community activists. One thing, Lisa.
Oh, hold on. Hold on.
No. I'm not finished. You get to do what you want to do later, okay? Okay. So I noticed in your background that you're a historian.
I am a historian.
And have did you complete your PhD? Were you?
No, my PhD turned into community microlending.
Ah, uh-huh. There we go. Which John will want to have, but I just want to say that I'm always like to see historians getting involved in public affairs and politics.
Yes.
Because historians understand this little thing called context.
Absolutely.
And that's that if you don't know where you've been, you can have no idea where you are or where you're going.
And importantly, my PhD was focused on the history of the governance of poverty and housing and homelessness and kind of government responses to those things from the 1930s to the 1970s in Victoria. So I have a deep understanding. I have a deep understanding of Victoria's history, particularly the
there goes my
city
chair.
Government.
Yeah.
And I have a deep understanding of the history of provincial legislation in those 40 years and then how the municipality and the province work together. So that's a really important context. And there's some food stuff I can talk about later from the 1930s and 40s as well.
Interesting. Now, John, I was going to, you know, ask Lisa a question, but you seem to want to break in.
Am I pouting? No. Can you see me?
He is. He's pouting, folks.
So it's not pretty when John breaks.
I was lucky enough and honored to be introduced to Lisa in the capacity of helping her build community microlending, an amazing initiative locally that is helping folks who want to enter small business and need a hand. And the first couple of businesses that we talked and dealt with actually were related to food, if
yes.
I recall.
Yep.
And that's when I started to have my eye open around the link between business and food and the link between the business, food, and community.
Yep.
And so I thank you for that.
You're welcome.
And maybe to build upon, you know, how we have your title, Executive Director of Community Microlending.
That's exactly right.
So expand upon that, please, around how this impacts the community, how you see it doing that sort of thing.
How community microlending does or how food does?
Perhaps all of them
together. Well, community microlending, just briefly for anyone who doesn't know what we do, we're a local organization and we make loans, as John said, to local people who want to start small businesses but don't qualify for credit from banks for whatever reason. And we actually don't have a pool of money. We have lenders in the community who step forward and say, hey, I'd like to lend to that business or I'd like to lend to that business. So we're basically matching local capital with local need, which is totally thrilling. And it's true. Our very first entrepreneur was, her business is called Green Girl Gardens, and she does plant starts and organic flowers, and had been turned away at the bank because what bank is going to lend you $5,000 to grow kale, ostensibly? And you know, but, you know, she is doing very well, and she has paid back her loan, and she has a beautiful field full of food and flowers. So there's a huge importance for the community taking a leap of faith in terms of financing local businesses.
One of the things we started to talk about in several of our segments was the role the new sensitivities to food playing in creating community.
Yes.
And bringing back a sense of community. If you listen to our old show and the old panel, you would know that, you know, a theme that I kept coming back to when we were talking about politics over and over again is stop expecting politics to be better until our communities are better.
Yes.
Politics at its best is organic.
Mm-hmm.
It comes from the bottom up. And I think it was de Tocqueville who said that, you know, bad politics is just a reflection of bad societies. And so let's talk about that a little bit. I mean, I'm very encouraged when I start seeing these things, and in my own personal experience, just the ability to go around the corner to Niagara Grocery and connect with five or six people whose names I know, and I may not even be going in to buy anything. In fact, they'd probably say normally he doesn't. Yeah. He just comes in to annoy us. But
right.
But talk about that a little bit.
So I can say lots about that. And going into your local grocery, in my neighborhood, it's Aubergine in Fernwood, similar to the Niagara Grocery and to the Fairfield Market. So there's certainly a sense of community built by going into a very small, very local grocery store. But for me, my experience is that food builds community by growing food together. And the best example in the city, in my opinion, and this is sprouted, if you will, a whole series of new initiatives, is the Haltane Commons. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if either of you are aware of the Haltane Commons, but it started some 4 or 5 years ago by two women, Rainey and Margot, and they live at Haltane and Asquith, and they just said, okay, enough of this grass, we're going to plant our boulevard. And they didn't just set out to do it themselves. They invited all of their neighbors to come and do it with them. And they had planting parties, and they battled the city's parks department. At a certain point, the parks department was going to close down the commons, and they got petitions and support. And now, if you drive along Haltane Street, you'll see not only their glorious commons, which during my my political campaign in the fall, we had a work party at, which drew tons of people, but you'll see that Haltane Street has been transformed, and there are indeed many commons all along Haltane Street. And if you turn the corner on Asquith, you'll see commons spreading up Asquith Street. And the key difference than planting vegetables in your backyard to digging up your boulevard and inviting your neighbors to come and help you. And then when the harvest is ready, anyone can come. It doesn't belong to anyone. It belongs to the collective. And that is the new way, I think, of doing food together. And to your point, that will transform politics.
Mm-hmm. It certainly transforms community. And,
yes.
And Lisa, you know, I could be branded a whole bunch of ways.
And and have been, actually.
And one of those multiple brands is business guy, chamber guy, folks who will only and continually eat in restaurants and don't actually connect back to the community sometimes. That I've heard.
Mm-hmm.
And we're branded that way. Mm-hmm. This is an issue that transcends that.
Because we all eat. We all eat food.
Exactly. And I can't help but love what it brings to bringing people together and breaking down these barriers.
Well, and
so I'm thrilled by what you're saying, and the fact that it's not the purview of just this segment of society or these kind of people. It's all of us.
That's right, because the people who live on Haltane Street and other places around the city where these commons have spread up may come home from their government job or their lawyer job or their accountant job and take off their suit and put on their work boots and go across the street and grow.
There's a common understanding.
Exactly.
And a commonality.
And it breaks down. I think growing food together breaks down barriers between people, and that can't help but create a stronger society. You know, as there's this great quote from Fernwood has a small newspaper called The Village Vibe, and there's an article in there about not food specifically, but neighbors going and getting in touch and meeting each other. One woman moved onto the street and invited 40 people to come to her house for soup, and she made a big pot of soup. She said, you know, at the end of the article, she said, in a time of crisis, it's not your Facebook friends who you're going to turn to.
Yeah,
exactly.
That's right.
Exactly. In the case of John, his 3,475 close friends on Facebook. That's right. Yeah.
Listen, we'll get you later.
Yeah. We have to take a quick commercial break. We'll be right back with Lisa Helps.
Level Ground Trading. Local, direct, delicious.
What does being local mean to you? My name is Stacey Taves, and I co-founded Level Ground Trading 15 years ago. We embody what it means to be local. We're a zero-waste facility sending nothing to Heartland, utilizing 13 streams of recycling and compost. We pay our staff to cycle to work on the peninsula, and we sponsor hundreds of local nonprofit groups each year. That's what being local means to me.
Level Ground Coffee served at the Saanich Fair is donated by us. Buy a cup to support your favorite community organization at this year's fair.
I'll get the Smuggler's Clubhouse sandwich with fries and an iced tea.
Okay, want a second floor reno on that clubhouse?
That's
where we take out the middle piece of bread.
Nice one.
When they say they're the friendliest little pub in Victoria, they mean it. Smuggler's Cove Pub in Cadborough Bay Village. Open from 11:30 to 11:30 Monday to Saturday, Sunday brunch from 11 to 2, and a great lineup of Victoria craft beers every single day. Smuggler's Cove Pub, the friendliest little pub in Victoria. Daily specials online at smugglerscovepub.com.
Men of Victoria, lend me your voices. The Orion Male Voice Choir needs you to sing on our first studio CD. Proceeds will help fund ongoing bursaries to developing young singers. Sherry Ulrich, Allison Crowe, Barney Bentall, and Baldy are all adding their talent to this project, so why don't you? No experience necessary, you just need to be able to carry a tune. Our motto is, you can't be unhappy if you sing. So join us Mondays, starting at 7 p.m. on Labor Day at Centennial United Church. For more information, visit arionchoir.ca.
She's sold over 100 million albums.
You're so passionate.
He's got at least that many t-shirts.
Absolute total rubbish.
She's hitting prime time one more time.
I don't think singing is for you.
And he's a seasoned veteran, ready for battle.
Shut it and start singing.
It's Brit versus the Brit. Simon Cowell welcomes Britney Spears to the judges' table on CTV's The X Factor. It all starts Wednesday, September 12th.
It's the More Points event at Save On Foods. Spend $200 and you'll earn 5,000 more rewards points. Plus, use your More Rewards MasterCard and you'll earn even more points. That means more points, more destinations, and more free rewards for the whole family. Redeem your points today at morerewards.ca. Join us for the More Points event on now. Save On Foods, BC's very own since 1915.
Crawling through Colwood, packed on the Pat Bay, mixed up on Mackenzie, and maneuvering through the Malahat, first with traffic. If it's happening, it's here. Victoria's News Authority, CFAX 1070.
Welcome back to CFAX Sunday Morning Public Affairs on CFAX 1070, Victoria's News Authority, broadcasting from British Columbia's capital city. My name's Bob Russell. I'm in the studio with my co-host, John Jurisic, and joining us is Lisa Helps, Victoria City Councillor. Let's turn our attention, or guns if you will, to government. And, you know, certainly, Lisa, you can talk about the municipal level. I'm sure you have some opinions about what's going on provincially as well. I want to talk about, you know, what does or doesn't get done by government to give people what they need about food and the importance of it. And I'd like to start with something that's always been, I've found, quite remarkable. And that's how the Vancouver Island Health Authority thought that, you know, it would be a good idea to enter into a contract with a company that sells sugar-laced, deep-fried, refined flour products in their lobbies, sometimes only steps away from the cardiac ward. Does that seem a little odd to you?
When you started talking about government, I wrote in my little notebook here, VHAW. Because I've got going back to something Jane said, but yes, that seems very odd to me.
Yeah. Well, what do we do? I mean, you're you know, a municipal councillor. I mean, you're not a provincial cabinet minister yet. What do you do about that?
Well, the best that the city could do in terms of actually making our opinion known to VHAW is making a motion to write a letter to VHAW expressing our discontent with the business they've chosen in. Mm-hmm. Public.
But what does the provincial government do? I mean, why doesn't, you know, the Minister of Health?
Yeah, well, that's the right place to look.
Excuse me,
but there are a number of small local coffee shops that produce healthy food.
Yeah.
This is where going to business, right? This is where it's not just about food and it's not just about business. It's about the two things coming together. Because in the example that you're talking about, why not stimulate the local economy by putting a local coffee shop or a local business into the lobbies of our hospitals at the same time providing good and healthy food, right? To me, it makes utter sense to go that way.
I don't think there's enough. Okay, so small business hat on. Totally agree with you. Why isn't that happening? And it goes back to some earlier discussions we had around food is appearing at Walmart, it's appearing at Costco. How do we break that cycle? Why does someone – oh, excuse me, I'm just drinking my coffee from my Tim Hortons cup. So what are we going to do to change that, Lisa? You've got to have some ideas.
Well, this is where it gets really complicated because my idea is to – and it's legislatively not possible for the municipal government, but it probably is possible for the provincial government. And I'm coming at it from another angle municipally to try and fix the problem. So the reason that Tim Hortons can outbid, for example, AJ's Organic Cafe is because they're a giant corporation with tons of resources, whereas AJ's Organic Cafe, which would be a great thing to have in hospital lobbies, is a small one- or two-person show.
Yes. Without the power to build this, the economies of scale.
Yeah, exactly. Without the power and without the resources. So the city can't really do very much because the community charter requires that we treat all businesses the same. Mm-hmm. Right? But there is a very interesting...
But aren't some businesses more equal than others? They should be.
Yes.
There's one thing that the city can do, and again, it's a very complex legal structure that would need to be set in place, and it's not something that can happen overnight. But we're provincially legislated to be able to create revitalization areas, right? Mm-hmm. And in particular, economic revitalization areas, and there are certain provisions that we can set as part of that to say we want more of this and less of this. Mm-hmm. But there are all sorts of risks inherent in doing that. Kamloops has some really, really interesting economic revitalization areas in play. So I'm looking at that. But that's what the city can do to try and fix this problem. But I think it really is a provincial and never mind, it's VEHA. VEHA is the one that has Tim Hortons in there. Mm-hmm. So VEHA is the one that can say, hey, all those things that Jane said, mm-hmm. you know, about, oh, it might be a little bit more expensive, but here are the benefits. Mm-hmm. Get someone local in there to provide your coffee and snacks.
Well, and I think that we all remember the battle with schools to get vending machines out. Mm-hmm. And the first thing schools said was, well, fine, are you going to replace the revenue?
Yeah.
If it's got to be a local producer or service provider who has to go in and instead of a big chain that can afford to pay larger bucks for that, the hospitals are going to say, okay, replace the revenue. And which sort of takes us, into an interesting place in that, I've often thought, and I know, Lisa, you're doing a lot of work right now on the fiscal state of the Victoria city government.
Mm-hmm.
We're much worse off than people realize, because any number of our institutions, whether it's hospitals, schools, certainly universities and colleges for this, have had to find and have found alternative sources of revenue. And now, in many instances, as a result, they're not necessarily always operating in the public interest. And, from a municipal point of view, mm-hmm. I mean, you've done a pretty good job of outlining one way to go. What other things, can you do to sort of – can municipal government do to promote people maybe growing vegetables rather than planting a lawn, to promote communities to get together, to create – areas where things like the Niagara Grocery and Fairfield Market can thrive?
Mm-hmm. I'll answer that question in a moment, but I think you should invite me back to talk about that other issue that you just pointed to, which is revenue generation versus cost savings and ways.
We will be bringing you back for that.
Okay.
Yes.
So in the,
because,
well,
no question. Much, yeah, no question.
Because, okay, but in the meantime, then, the city and food.
Yeah.
Well, the city... Part of the fiscal challenge that the city is in right now is that it has extended far beyond its mandate about what a city should do. So I'm not suggesting that the city should plant vegetable gardens or harvest vegetable gardens or get the parks department growing and harvesting kale and taking it to the food bank. But what I am suggesting is that, and never mind suggesting, I have in front of me here the city's new official community plan, which is just adopted as a bylaw in late July. And there is an entire chapter here, and I think this is really leading edge. There's an entire chapter called food systems. And so the city of Victoria has a food systems chapter sector in its official community plan, which says it's taking seriously what residents are already doing by getting together and growing food. So this is an enabling chapter. It's not a doing chapter. And I think if this chapter is implemented, and it has things like food system planning, urban food production on private land, food system infrastructure, access to food, and food waste. So there's all of this. It's not just like grow kale. It's what is the infrastructure needed to grow kale and carrots and tomatoes, et cetera.
Lisa, you and I have been kicking around this economic development thing for mm-hmm. some time now. And I've been involved with West Shore. I've been doing work in on the peninsula. And every instance there is, okay, what do we do? What are the industries we can promote? And frankly, I think Victoria is uniquely positioned to take advantage of now a new vision around food, that it's not simply what's in front of our on our plate every day. It's actually a business. It's an industry. It can transform a society.
Yeah,
I love this chapter. Talk to me more about that.
Well, this chapter combined with some other policies that the city's put in place recently, for example, food carts, right? Food carts, in my mind, are the absolute way to go to step into a new way of doing food, because they're small-scale enterprises, right? A food truck. Therefore, they need small-scale producers. So it goes small to small. And so when a food truck, and I think that if we do food trucks in Victoria, and this is something that Councillor Marianne Alto and I are looking at as a pilot project for next summer in conjunction with the Downtown Victoria Business Association, if we do that, we say, hey, these food trucks are going to be for local producers, for innovative food, for healthy food, for all of the things that logo on your mug is not. And so it's always about economic development and food growing at the same time. So when we talk about what the city's doing for food, it's not just enabling boulevard gardens. It's all the way from seed all the way to food waste.
Yeah, that's great. Now, tell me this issue, because it'll inevitably come up. How does a food truck, how does that sort of concept of a business impact a larger business that's been or right beside a restaurant? And
yeah,
I'm talking quite specifically about the Strathcona Hotel, right to the left, I think on Cormorant.
Courtney is
a food truck.
The Hungry Rooster.
So how does that work?
Well, one of the challenges right now with food trucks is that there's no bylaw and there's no legislation. So as long as they have the consent of a private property owner, they can set up and park their truck there regardless of what restaurant they're close to. But what we're working on bringing in is something that actually is regulatory, so that there would be no food truck set up within a certain distance of restaurants, a non-competitive clause, all of those kinds of things. And I think, I mean, there's two ways of going at it. So for example, Mole restaurant just mm-hmm. down the street here, he wants a food truck. He's got a bricks and mortar restaurant and he wants a food truck. Why? Because it will allow him to get more food from the farmers that he gets food from now. So there's the production side. And B, it will allow him when he's out at a festival to say, hey, come, you know, like the food? Well, I've got a bricks and mortar place on Pandora. Other way, Noodle Box started out as a food truck. Now it's got three bricks and mortar restaurants. So I think
right?
if it's done well and done sensitively, there's a huge potential, again, not just for food trucks, but for all of the back end local produce that's needed to supply
right.
those trucks.
Right.
We just have to take a quick commercial break and we'll be back with our last session with Lisa Helps.
You've locked your doors.
Come on.
You think you're safe.
What? No.
But you can't stop.
No.
The arrival of your bills. CFAX 1070 understands. That's why we're giving you a chance to beat your bills. Head over to the all-new CFAX1070.com and show us the bill you want taken care of. Then beginning September 3rd, listen for Al Farabee to announce your name weekday mornings at 7:10. You can win $50 to spend at Red Barn Market, taking the pressure off your food bill, and you'll qualify to have CFAX 1070 pay up to $500 to beat your bills. To enter and for full details, head to CFAX1070.com. Don't yell at your bills.
Get away!
Beat your bills. Beat your bills with Red Barn Market and Victoria's News Authority. CFAX 1070.
Sell your home faster and for more money with Ron Neal's Guaranteed Home Selling System. When you list with Ron, you receive these guarantees.
Your home advertised 24 hours a day until it's sold.
Your home advertised to millions on RonNeal.com.
Your home advertised in full color print ads until it's sold.
View the latest sales and listings in your neighborhood free and receive ongoing updates at RonNeal.com.
Call the Neal Estate Team for your real estate dream. RonNeal.com.
Let the sun shine in with Excalibur Glass. Get more out of your outdoor or indoor deck with a custom all-glass railing. Constructed with aluminum post supports, these railings are durable and attractive with no top or bottom rail to obscure your view. And of course, it'll add value to your home. Get the most out of your scenery with a custom all-glass railing from Excalibur Glass. You'll clearly see the difference. Excalibur Glass and Aluminum, the homeowner's store. 2189 Keating Cross Road.
Save thousands at Saunders Subaru during the 2012 Subaru Fleet and Courtesy Car Sale on now. Save on the tough, all-weather capable, great handling 2012 Forester or the 2012 Legacy featuring standard all-wheel drive, big car comfort, and lively performance. Drive a deal on the 2012 Outback. Its versatility and high-end options will make you happy. The Saunders Subaru Fleet and Courtesy Car Sale. Hurry in for the best selection. Saunders Subaru on the Old Island Highway. The coffee's always on.
When news breaks, Victoria turns to CFAX 1070. News, weather, traffic. When you need to know. If it's happening, it's here. Victoria's News Authority, CFAX 1070.
Welcome back. You're listening to the last segment of CFAX Sunday Morning Public Affairs on CFAX 1070, Victoria's News Authority, broadcasting from British Columbia's capital city. My name's Bob Russell. I'm joined in the studio by my co-host, John Jurisic, and we have Lisa Helps, Victoria City Councillor and community activist. And we've been talking about food, and just before the commercial break, we were talking about small business opportunities in the new food world. You had a question, John.
Yeah. When we were speaking with Ken from Niagara
Grocery.
Yeah. I said to mature and develop the food industry as an economic development driver,
mm-hmm.
how about some of the supply and distribution channels that feed the groceries that might possibly, small grocers like him, that could possibly mature feed a food truck.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that there might have been some semblance of organization and efficiency there. Surprise, surprise, he says no. Over 100 suppliers come to him, and there's no sort of organized system in which perhaps there could be some economies of scale that could allow some local food businesses to become more efficient, to become more competitive. Could that be something that possibly the city might help promote somehow, maybe.
Well,
is that a role for government? I don't know.
I don't think so. I think that's a role for the private sector. And there are, but perhaps not widely developed enough, there are the beginnings of that kind of coordination by the producers to get their product to market. Okay. So there's two that I'm aware of. One is called Food Roots, and that is a gathering up process of food from the peninsula and getting it to market here. They had a couple years ago some things called pocket markets, which were not as successful as I think they could have been. And again, when you're trying something new, as I well know from starting community microlending, there's all sorts of learning curves. The other one, which is really interesting and I think is sustainable, is Saanich Organics. And that's a group of, I believe, 7 farmers out in Saanich that have come together and pooled their resources to get their produce to market. So I think something like Saanich Organics has a great future, and other models like that where producers are saying, hey, we need to get our food to market. And particularly as the market for local organic produce grows, it's a win-win.
Exactly. If a small business, if somebody wants to start a small business in this area, mm-hmm. and just earlier on someone talked about growing garlic, mm-hmm. if they were aware and more understanding of how to get their product to market, I think that would facilitate more businesses coming on.
Well, and it also goes the other way. I think that in this day and age, in this region, if you can be, if you're a local restaurant and you can say, we have local produce, we have local meat, that will garner you a certain clientele and will help to grow your business. Mm-hmm. It simply will. I mean, I met with a developer. This is a little bit of a segue or a side topic, but I met with a developer, right? I'm on the planning and land use committee at the city, and he said, here's my development. What do you think? You know, rental units looks great. There's this whole inner courtyard. I said, you really want to sell this? Put in food gardens. Say that you are going to provide raised food gardens for your tenants, right? And that,
Good job, Lisa.
Well, but again, that will help his development succeed. It'll help people that are living in those buildings to get fresh produce, and it takes the
and
burden.
And help build community.
And help build community.
Absolutely.
Okay. When you know, we're talking about, you know, getting together people in the in this, and I'm thinking from a business point of view, when Ken was on, he was talking about, given their lack of purchasing power,
yep. Yes.
That, you know, there's still certain things that they need to have in their store,
mm-hmm.
like milk,
yep.
for example, mm-hmm. and other things that, you know, they just can't buy at the price that the big chains can.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and I wonder what opportunity there is for, you know, the Niagara groceries and all these new community-based little stores, mm-hmm. to pool together.
That's a brilliant idea.
And create some purchasing power.
Yeah.
Only for, and this is, I think, as I would understand it, correct me if I'm wrong, they would need to do that only for those things that they sell, that the big guys sell.
Mm-hmm.
But they wouldn't want to do that for the local produce, because the local produce still has, are small people.
Yeah.
You know, they're not developing scale. So you're not going to have scale to scale. You're going to have scale to no scale.
Well, you know what?
So just buying the milk and buying stuff like that, you know, because people will go into these stores and they'll see, you know, if they're price conscious, they really like the stuff that's there. They like the local produce, but then they'll go over to the refrigerator and they'll see that their 2 quarts of milk is costing more than it costs down the street at the grocery store.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that what you've hit on is something that's really important, and I'm not. It's kind of a half-formed thought in my mind, but I think
most of my thoughts are half-formed.
That's why conversation is wonderful. Exactly. Conversation helps us to form.
John,
our thoughts.
On the other hand, many of his are quarter-formed.
That's why John needs two of us.
Exactly. John. We complete you.
Oh, excellent.
Okay, thank you. Hey, sorry. Lisa,
no, that's okay. But I think the point that you're bringing up is pool resources where resource pooling is needed and leave it alone where it's not. So yeah. on the side of the small scale producers, it's to their benefit to come together and pool their resources.
Mm-hmm.
On the side of the small scale entrepreneur grocery store owners, there are some ways in which they need to come together to pool their resources and some ways in which they don't. And I think really what we're talking about is good business.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So there does seem, for those entrepreneurs out there, mm-hmm. an opportunity to start to galvanize and organize some of the channels to have some of these disparate, you know, independent smaller businesses who might be extraordinarily good at what they're doing,
mm-hmm.
to somehow now help them bring that to market. If this show helps that, if your awareness and your community activism, mm-hmm. helps that is fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
But we have an opportunity here to talk to you in your role as counselor.
Yes.
What can we don't have a ton of time, but
yeah.
talk to us more about how the city can help develop this sort of thing.
We have more than enough time for
yeah.
this.
Oh, outstanding.
Remember, I'm the time guy.
Yeah. But you complete me.
But stop telling guests how much time we have. That's my job. Okay. Lisa, yeah. we have about 4 minutes.
All right. Okay. No pressure. Yeah. Well, so what can the city do to support that? The city can't really do much to support the business model that we've just talked about. What the city can do is all the things that we say we're going to do in the official community plan. So we can look at food production on public land and on private land. We can have enabling policies. For example, I mean, this is very future focused, but when people apply for parking variances when they're doing redevelopment, maybe we can say, okay, you can have your parking variance as long as you add a food garden to your
right.
property. I mean, we can't mandate food growing. We're not talking about communism, but we are talking about
because earlier you were mentioning the collective, and I thought,
yeah,
we don't want to go
where
there.
Where does she lead? No, that's right.
I think, you know, there's two words to avoid, collective and kale.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, like you know, people think, say, they hear kale and they go, oh.
Okay, you know what? Actually, let me flip this around. So a developer comes to us, or a homeowner comes to us and says, I want to add a garden suite, and I need a parking variance, and I'd like to plant a food garden. And then we say, okay, we see that as a plus. It's true. The first thing I said makes no sense. The city can't mandate food gardens, but the city can be responsive to a homeowner or a property developer saying, I'd like to add a food garden instead of a parking spot. Okay, awesome. Right. Yeah. That's just that. Those are the kinds of things. And also the city has, putting on my historian's hat, the city has tons of public space, obviously. Mm-hmm. Parks, boulevards, all of those kinds of things. In the Depression, and I'm not saying that we're in the Depression now, but we're at a very interesting turning
point.
We're in a very interesting economic present tense. And during the Depression, the city of Victoria gave citizens seeds and said, go plant these on city-owned lots. And furthermore, at the end of the year, they held a gardening contest and awarded cash prizes to the citizens that had the best food produced on city-owned lands.
Get out.
Wow. That's amazing.
So,
that's
not amazing. Often both Bob and I are speechless.
Yeah. That's right.
So,
well, but yeah,
and it's about implementing. It's about implementing these old new ways.
Yes. Yeah. Well, the old new ways. Hey, you would have missed the first segment of the show. I know you weren't able to listen, but I was talking about how a friend of mine who teaches at a college was teaching some Chinese students who had not been here long, and one of them sort of asked, "I noticed you have grass on your lawns. How do you prepare that to eat it?"
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was just like, we've got all sorts of space, But, the viability of the small model, you've been involved with life cycles, I know. Mm-hmm. But how are they doing?
Right now, they're doing very well.
They are.
And they struggled for a little while. And this is precisely because, and I'm glad we have probably, 37 seconds left to talk about the nonprofit sector. Let's not waste time by saying how much time we have.
41. Okay. 41. Okay. 41. Okay.
So life cycles, is a nonprofit society. And that's another huge shift that's taking place in this new economy is nonprofit societies are thinking, how can we run like a social enterprise?
Yeah,
and
exactly.
Once life cycles got its head around that, they're doing better. Because they're harvesting abundance, the Fruit Tree Project, for example, and they're making money to put back into their organization and back into the food system. Yeah. So that's Life Cycles is a brilliant example of a social enterprise.
That's great. Are there other okay, without putting you on the spot.
Well, Sanage Organics is excellent. Another one. It's not a nonprofit, but social enterprise refers to business and nonprofit that are doing something that has a social good. So Sanage Organics, Food Roots is another one. Lots more to talk about in the future.
Great. Well, thank you, Lisa.
Thank you.
I'm afraid that's all the time we have this week.
Bob, are we out of time?
We are out of time. We are out of time. Just to be clear, I'm the time guy, and if I say we're out of time, then there is no time. I want to thank our guests today, Gail Hammond from UBC's Faculty of Land and Food Systems, Ken Winchester, who operates Niagara Grocery in James Bay and Fairfield Market, Dr. Jane Reside, a naturopathic physician who you can find at drjane.ca, and Lisa Helps, who... Victoria City Councillor and community activist. And as always, our digitally dexterous producer, TJ Mullen, who was amazing today. And my co-host, John Jurisic. Are you going to change before we go to breakfast, or are you going to go looking like that? I just want to know.
For those folks that want to have some input, Twitter handle, hashtag SUNAMPA. We look forward to hearing from you.
Great. Thank you. Most importantly, I want to thank you, our listeners, for spending some of your Sunday morning with us. I hope we've informed you, stimulated you, and today maybe caused you to stop and think before you take that first bite. Eat better, Victoria, and enjoy the rest of your long weekend.